This is tape recording number 6106, C27. A lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 27th of June, 1961. The title of this lecture is CCHs, Circuits. This tape is 72 minutes long.
Okay, well, this is the 27th of June. It was the last time I looked, but it might have slipped. You're apparently doing all right. A mile far away. The biggest difficulty people are having right now, although they don't know it, is CCHs, how they are done. What was that way back there in the dim historical past? You know, that sort of thing. Big conferences about it all. The monitoring and regulating factors which lie back of the CCHs should be placed in your hands. There are some monitoring factors that answer all of these questions if you want to get down and figure them out. And that is simply, the CCHs are a physical activity. They are not a mental activity. That tells you at once that they are not verbal. So if you go ahead and whistle Yankee Doodle and give the Lincoln's Gettysburg Address compounded with William Pitt's lecture on the protection of colonies. What's this got to do with the CCHs? Got the idea? I mean, you could give the CCHs totally mum and they would work. Look at what this answers, this stable datum, see? Therefore, do you ever ask the PC and take his data the following question, how is it going? And then do you take his data? Do you then use the data to determine whether or not the process is flat? No, I will say you don't. Now, why do you say then occasionally the PC, how are you doing? Why do you say this at all? Well, I call your attention, I think it's clause 16, isn't it, of the auditor's code, which has to do with remaining in two-way communication with the PC. And that is all that has to do with. And it wouldn't matter if the PC said, I have 18 bayonets protruding in my stomach. The PC has not visually been observed to have a single change of comlag or physical twitch, jitters, screams, fusses, yammerings. There's been no change in anything the PC is doing for 20 minutes. And you say to the PC, well, how are you doing? And the PC says, well, my stomach is full of all these bayonets, and I've had this somatic turning on and off in my left zorch, and so forth. And you say, well, that's just fine. Well, thank you very much. All right, we're now going to do the next CCH. That sounds weird, doesn't it? Now, two-way comm with the PC. Now in CCH3 and CCH4, why do you say to the PC then, are you satisfied that you did it? That restrains you, fellow Scientologist, from pulling a gag I've seen happen too often. We don't care if the PC said he did it or didn't do it, or couldn't do it, or hadn't been able to do it, or was satisfied that he had done it, or thought he had halfway done it, or if he answered you in Arabic, we would say, that's fine, and we would give him the next command. You got the idea? Now, to keep the PC in two-way communication, we do the same thing, only we talk to the PC. But talking to the PC in the CCHs, you might as well be talking to the birds. It has nothing to do with you running the process. Just make up your mind to it. Because I'll tell you what I do. And the CCHs work for me very well. I tell you what I do. Never with an invalidative statement or frame of mind or anything of the sort, I move a book from the left to the right. See, my left to my right, you know. In the PC, I add in the book. And the PC picks up the book. And the PC scratches the back of his neck with it. And then I say, well, are you satisfied that you did that? And he says, oh, yes, I did that. And so I take the book, and maybe not the exact motion. I turn the book on edge, and I move it from my left to my right. And I turn the book upside down the next time. He thought he did it that time, too, except he stepped on it. And I'll turn it upside down, but I will keep moving this book from the left to the right until the PC does it. Otherwise, it's a flub. It is a flub. It's a delicate balance between invalidating the PC, you see, and making sure that you duplicate the auditing command that isn't flat, because the one from the left to the right is not flat. Couldn't be. He hadn't a clue. You got the idea? He just didn't have a clue. He moved the book from the left to the right. And the PC picked up the book and scratched under his armpit with it. You say, well, did you do that? And PC says, oh, yes, yes, I did that. And you take the book back, and to keep from invalidating him, you turn it around the other way, and you move it from the left to the right. Faintly different in the position of the book or something of the sort, or your hand, or whether you extend your little finger or something, but it's still a motion from the left to the right at the same rate of speed. Gotten that? Mm-hmm. All right, and I keep duplicating that type of motion until the PC is flat on it. Hand motions, same way. Same way. I asked him if he contributed to the motion, and shucks, he was running halfway across the room, you know. And he says, oh, no. Yes, yes, oh yes, 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 I contributed to the motion, all right. That's good. He gets almost the same one again. And he gets it until I think he did it too. You understand? Mm-hmm. That's a delicate balance. If PC starts feeling invalidated because you were repeating the same motion, well, a lot of things could be wrong. But I did that, he says. Ah, yes, but a PC can say, well, I did that if you moved the book from the left to the right, and then on the next motion of the book, you moved it in a circle behind your own head. And the PC says, but I did that. What did you do, PC? Yes, he just did that. He moved the book from the left to the right by scratching the back of his head with it. You got the idea? You'll run into these. Well, so why plunge in that deep before it becomes idiotic, don't you think? If PC did it, he did it, and if he didn't do it, he didn't do it. But you mustn't be pedantic, because instead of an acknowledgement, you give an invalidation. And as soon as you start giving an invalidation instead of an acknowledgement, why, the PC starts going downhill, not uphill, because you're giving him lose, 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 and you've got to give him win, 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 win. All right, he thinks he did the same one by scratching the back of his head with the book when you moved it from the left to the right. Well, I gave him a win. You said, that's fine. Now I go ahead and move books from the left to the right, don't you think? I keep going on moving books from the left to the right, but not accusatively. It's a very delicate point. Physical motion is all that counts in any of the CCHs, and it doesn't matter what the PC says. You're trying to keep in communication with the PC, and that is all there is to it. Follow? That's all there is to it. You'd feel awfully strange if a robot clanked into the room, sat down in the auditing chair, and began to pump your hands. Matter of fact, you'd feel a little queasy. And in view of the fact that this has probably happened quite often on the track, the robot walked in and started to dismantle you or something of the sort because you just had your doll body revoked, you react very badly to something that doesn't communicate. You probably wouldn't even object to the robot dismantling your doll body if he came in and say, well, I got an order here from the general counsel that you, having been guilty of mopery and dopery in high space, are herewith deprived of one doll body, and we're going to take it apart and leave it on the bench for 72 hours. Well, that's what I used to do. That's a different one. You probably would have gone along with it. It wouldn't have been quite so bad, but some inhuman, unspeaking, unthinking, unfeeling set of cranes suddenly move in and start pulling the doll body apart. Some uncertainty has entered into the situation. Well, therefore, I keep the uncertainty out of the situation in doing CCHs. I say, well, this is what we're going to do. I do it. Now, you can make all kinds of mistakes in running the CCHs, but that stable datum will set you right on most of them. It's a physical action. It's physical observation. And those are where the CCHs live. Now, there's another one. No command in the CCHs is left understood. You don't clear a command and then insist that the PC do it from there on out. In other words, you don't say, now you're always going to turn counterclockwise. And then we never thereafter give him an order to turn counterclockwise. That violates the rules of auditing commands. And the principal rule of an auditing command is it is given now in this unit of time, and nothing has any validity except this unit of time and the command that is just given. You know that as an old standby from way back when. Well, don't violate it with the CCHs. Don't say, well, now here and after is a force stated, you're going to turn counterclockwise, and then correct the PC if he turns clockwise. Oh, no. PC has no orders to turn clockwise. You say, you give me that hand. If there were no designation of any kind, it would be perfectly proper for the PC to give you either hand. If you say, you turn around in CCH2, and there's no designation in any of any kind which way to turn around, then any way that the PC turns around is right. Right? There's no designation. Now, if you want the PC to turn in a certain way, then before you give the auditing command, put your hand on his shoulder and start to turn him and say, turn around. You got that? Well, that's a designation, isn't it? And you give me that hand, you nod at the hand. Pointing at the hand, you'll find, if you practice it, is not feasible. You can't point at the hand and then pick up the hand and then do this with the hand. And it's just too much. But you can nod at his right hand and say, you give me that hand. It's a physical thing anyhow. The thing is all actually done by theta communication and physical motion. The two things are combined, and the English language has nothing to do with it. But we just stay in communication with the PC. You got the idea? So that's why we have the commands. Now, putting the hand back in the PC's lap causes a great deal of difficulty to one and all. Now, what do you do? Do you put it in his lap or something? Well, now, if the PC's hand were to be very limp as he extended you the hand, if the hand's very limp, you see, you've actually had to take it by the wrist, and it's out there in an acute state of catatonia right now. And you drop his hand, if by some accident it were to strike his knee or strike the edge of the chair, you would have been in violation of a primary function of an auditor, which is to safeguard the PC from harm during a session. If anything makes a PC scream, it's you preventing somebody from coming in the room, you preventing him from lousing himself up. You get the idea? Because it's your responsibility that the PC can be audited in that session, particularly at that moment of the auditing command. And you go ahead and drop his hand in thin air, and he knocks his wrist bone or something like this against the edge of his chair and so forth. Well, that's a silly thing for you to do, don't you think? At the same time, it is equally silly to take a PC's hand when the PC is putting it decently back in his lap every time, to call out a couple of destroyer escorts and have it escorted back there. You got the idea? That, again, is silly. So the things that are silly in the CCHs, or that seem silly to you, are probably wrong. You probably got them wrong. You got the idea? There really is no 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drill. This was invented later while trying to teach the people. You see, there really is no such drill. The PC is giving you his hand quite nicely. Well, all right, so you take his hand, and he's removing his hand from yours quite nicely. I acknowledge them, putting it in his lap, or on the arm of the chair. Well, what else is called for at this point? Nothing else is called for. You simply sit there, give him the command, take his hand, thank him. But then all of a sudden he's getting coy and he doesn't want to give you his hand, so you pick his wrist up and move his hand over and put it in your hand, right? All right, now at this time you notice that the hand as it touches yours is in a complete state of inertia. Well, you certainly are not going to drop it any more than you drop your watch. You've got to put it someplace, so you put it back in his lap. Got the idea? So reason governs these things. All right, now let's take this fact, which has got some auditors a bit bounced up, because a lot of auditors knew 8C, and 8C is not tone 48C. 8C is not a CCH. We only carelessly refer to CCH2 as 8C. It's not 8C. It never was. 8C goes something like this. You say to the PC, look at that wall. No. Not 8C. Not the first 8C. The first 8C is walk over to that wall. Touch that wall. Walk over to that wall, thank you. Touch that wall, thank you. Walk over to that wall, touch that wall. That's it. Walk over to that wall, thank you. Touch that wall, thank you. Walk over to that wall, thank you. Touch that wall, thank you. That was old 8C, and I think in its most virgin original form before it got raped by misunderstandings. Now, the next evolution on this line is unimportant because it evolved pretty far. But frankly, tone 48C, unlike CCH1, give me that hand, improved through complication. It is better in the final form that it was in. But the final form of development, I don't think, was ever printed. And it was a U preceded each part of its commands. You look at that wall. And the auditor would point to the wall. You walk over to that wall. Now, there was a further point of complication as you walk that body over that wall. Skip it. That's getting too complicated. But you walk over to that wall. Thank you. You touch that wall. Thank you. Turn around. Thank you. You look at that wall. Thank you. You walk over to that wall. Thank you. You touch that wall. Thank you. Turn around. Now that was a high point of complication from old 8C. Now this point of complication went further. It's you look at that wall. You walk that body over to that wall, or you make that body walk over to that wall. With your right hand, you touch that wall. You turn that body around clockwise. Now, he said it's going just a little far. It is what works. It is what works. And that earlier one that I gave you. You look at that wall, all right? The PC looks at the floor. Clank, your jaw comes up, straighten your hand out on his jaw, and wham, he looks at the wall. See, that's it. You grab him actually to the back of the neck and his jaw, and he looks at that wall. If he squinches his eyes, that sort of thing, you've still got this hand ready, and you pull his eyelids open. That's correct. That's perfectly correct action. Okay? All right. And he's looked at the wall. And now you walk over to that wall. And he walks over to that wall, or he gets carried over to that wall, but there's some kind of action takes place where he transports himself from where he is to where you want him to be. Now, when you say you touch that wall, you therefore don't pick out a spot for him to touch, and you don't pick out a hand for him to touch with, because it is not an understood proposition at all. You haven't said it in the auditing command, so therefore his putting his right knee against the wall is an adequate response to the auditing command. Correct? All right. Now, in view of the fact that you actually intend him to touch it with his hand, after a while, if the right knee seems to be just a little bit too insouciant, or something of the sort, I have been known to add in, with your right hand, touch that wall. Not as a correction of my own auditing command, but on subsequent commands. But that's a change of the command, and so it isn't so good. And you'll find out that if he will touch the wall, even with his knee, it takes a little longer, but it will bring the maneuver. Do you understand? So there's no sense in being pedantic about it. And I'll straighten you out quite clearly about this. It is you look at that wall. He does. You say, thank you. Tone 40. And you say, you walk over to that wall, and he does, and you say, thank you, and then you say, you touch that wall, and he does, and you say, thank you, and then you say, turn around, thank you. And that is about all there are to it. That is a very simple evolution. Now, as I say, you could get too pedantic and so forth, but that factually is a more operable command line than a complicated command line, and it is more effective than old 8C by considerable. Now, when you've got this fellow whizzing and dealing, you could hand yourself some losers if you said to yourself, now I intended for him to touch the wall with the heel of his left foot by tone 40 intention, unspoken, and he didn't do it. He touched it with his hand, therefore I've had a lose. Yes, you could fix yourself up to have some losers that way, but that's nonsense. It exceeds the process. It has nothing to do with the process. You want this fellow under control, and you want him to get the communication, and you want him to gain havingness, and this is a very fine process with which to do it. All right, as far as CCH3 is concerned, this is old Sam Space mimicry, and it just doesn't matter much what you say. There are a set of commands. They haven't become unduly complicated or anything of the sort, except you don't dispose of the hands. You don't do anything like that. You give it one-handed with an unwilling PC. You only use one paw, and with the other paw, you steer him through the motions, okay? And the book, same way. You make one paw motions with the book. And if the PC doesn't do it, of course, you tuck the book in his paw, and you move the book in the motion, and you thank him for it and take the book back. All right, now, CCH1, now, has this its additional ramifications, had the left hand, both hands, all kinds of hands, you understand? So why call it another process? Why call it another process? You don't have to do these things. You don't have to not do these things. But you do the process that isn't flat. That is, say, if you're saying, you give me that hand, you give me that hand. And the fellow, pardon me, you don't have to say, you give me that hand, just say, give me that hand. The PC has been giving his right hand for about 12, 15 hours of auditing, and this is getting dull even to you because he's been flat on it for some time every time you went by it and so forth. Start nodding at the other hand. See? Bust down his automaticities. Now, I use these things that every time I come back through the CCHs, I will break down an automaticity on this proposition. I bust up the installed machinery. And that's the only reason you flip over to the other hand or start saying, give me those hands, or anything of that sort. Now, there's another point here. It has value, in other words. It has value, and that's the only thing that regulates an auditing command or process. Does it have value? Well, it does. It has value. Another thing I do consistently in running the CCH, as you might be interested in, is that I change my pace every now and then. It's, give me that hand, thank you. 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 Now, originally, when this was being done in London, they were studying, actually, to give the same audit command newly in the same unit of command, and they were actually building up machinery this way. And a guy could build up machinery against this thing faster than you could tear it down. And the way to bust up machinery on CCH1 is by occasionally varying the pace. And the PC will jump it. I just sit there and look at him. You just never heard of his hand, you know. You haven't said, give me that hand yet, you see. And here's his hand out there practically busting your chest open, you know. He's jumped the command. Jumped the command one way or the other. It's a good control factor. And I will actually pick up a person's hand, put it back in his lap gently, something like that, and then give the auditing command. I'll refuse his hand if I didn't ask for it. But that's only when it's too pointed and there's no particular reason to communicate, because the communication is usually enough. The person is made aware of the fact that they've jumped the auditing command, and they haven't been aware of the fact they've been jumping the auditing command. You see, the last 5 or 10 that you gave them, they've been jumping the auditing command. Their hand is halfway over at the time you say the auditing command. Of course, it doesn't have too much to do with the verbalization of the thing, but you haven't even laid the intention into him yet, see? So you're not auditing the PC. He's gone on some kind of a machine. Well, a way to bust that down is put comm lags in your auditing. Speed it up or slow it down slightly. You don't even have to do it extremely. And the PC is giving his hand at this rate. Give me that hand. Thank you. Give me that hand. Thank you. Give me that hand. Thank you. He's giving his hand at this rate, you see? That'd be pretty fast. All right. So you say, give me that hand. Thank you. 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 Got the idea? You can practically see the cogwheels of the machinery fly off. You know, the guy, what's this? What's going on here? Oh, there's an auditor here. Oh, something new has been added to this room. I hadn't noticed this auditor before. Of course, the original of the CCHs was that the individual was given an auditor by the CCHs. And we found out the main thing that happened. We found some auditors, by the way, who were never found by the PC. For some peculiar reason, the PC just never found these auditors. And it had sometimes happened, factually happened, that PC after PC wouldn't find the auditor. And yet we found when we taught this auditor to run the CCHs that he normally could get away with this, and he called attention of himself to the PC. But this wasn't when we had the CCHs, this was afterwards. This first mechanism was given to a PC. I think it is traits B and C, I think, are the main traits. Well, it's A, yes, but it's C that I keep my eagle eye on. And if C doesn't rise during an intensive, well, I just conclude he never found the auditor, that's all. And if he never found the auditor, there's no reason to blame the auditor. It's just the PC has a rather poor power of observation. And you should have been running the CCHs, that's all, because they were the remedy for this sort of thing. When we'd see graphs of this character, knew something else was indicated, and so on, and developed some drills by which this could be done. There were a great many of these drills, and they finally peeled down to the most effective of these drills, which became CCH1, CCH2, CCH3, CCH4. Those are the most effective of these drills. These are the ones that seem to have an effect on almost any case. Now, the purpose of those was to find the auditor. And therefore, if the PC goes on automatic, he hadn't got an auditor, has he? Well, a PC can go on automatic. Now, you needn't worry about it too much. It doesn't put any strain on the situation. You just run the CCHs right, and this automaticity takes care of itself. But I will call to your attention the fact that it is silly to continue to pace your auditing commands on an automaticity if you don't expect one to occur in the PC. If you want one to occur in the PC, always keep your auditing commands exactly the same pace. And doing CCH2, you'll find this PC is halfway across the room and you haven't said a word. And I am rather fond of making them look a little silly. You know, somebody's been jumping the gun, I'll just stand there. You know, you go, what's this all about? What's this? See? Then normally come back where they were. I don't even tell them to come back. They will usually. They come back and stand there. I'm trying. It brings it home. It brings it home. But, of course, these points make them find the auditor, don't they? Without invalidating them terrifically, because actually you are not invalidating them. They're doing something weird that has nothing to do with the process. This makes them very aware of the fact, too. Bust it up quick. Now, running the CCHs are then based upon what is doable and making every auditing command newly, and based as well on the fact that they are a physical process. They had to do with theta mest. It's a direct theta mest process. Your command is a theta command. That is to say, you're laying it in the guy. You could probably do the CCHs if you were real good. You could probably do the CCHs without opening your mouth. If you don't believe me, if you're running real hot someday, think the auditing command to the PC. You know, in other words, transmit it to the PC. I'm calling this your attention because an auditor could really muck up a PC this way, you see. Puts the intention into the PC's head, and then comlags, and then gives the verbal auditing command, and then criticizes the PC because the PC has jumped the gun. This would be a wonderful way of invalidating a PC. You get the idea? You actually could do it. Because in running a PC, it happens all too often, I mean, it'd be coaching or something like that. I don't play fair on upper indoc coaching and that sort of thing. I start doing it tone 40, and they eventually go straight into the process. Bang. What you can observe, however, is think the auditing command at the PC, you know. I mean, put the intention there, independent of your verbalization. Put the intention in the PC's head and watch his hand jump to touch the wall. Quite interesting. If you're good at it, you can make them do it. But that you can't do it is no particular reason for anything, because one of the things that can make you fail to do it, the PC might be rigged wrong. You put the intention of his head to touch the wall and he stamps his foot. Doesn't mean anything except he's got his switchboard across. For instance, I was very much invalidated one time. There was a fellow came to call, and I didn't particularly want to see anybody that particular day. I had a lot of work to do, or a lot of loafing to do, or something of the sort. I was trying to figure out something. And so I brought my intention into the living room, you see, that he would leave. And by gosh, he didn't. You know, I thought this is very upsetting, you know. I mean, what's the matter with me? I'm slipping my cogwheels and I have failed utterly. And so on. I went about my work and eventually the nattering and snarling and so forth kept on coming. Didn't have anything much to do with what we were doing, you know. Had some acquaintance with this particular individual a couple of years afterwards. And I found out something very interesting. The individual was on an intentional reverse. And he was totally inverted on intentions. And thinking the thought into his head that he should leave would glue him in the chair, you know. Just I never did run the reverse experiment on him of thinking he should stay glued in the chair particularly. But I have on others and actually seen them practically be catapulted out of their chair. Fantastic thing, you know, stick in the chair and wham! They're going, well, I've got to go now. It just came for the evening, you know. Terrible situation. Actually, unless you were doing a whole body control of the PC, you could think like you can think of a messed object and make an ashtray sometimes move or do something weird. People running upper indoc sometimes have funny things happen with ashtrays and so on. They get quite upset about it and they think they better not do it and things like this. But the best thing to think of an ashtray is you have gravity, you have no gravity, you know, that kind of thing, if you want something funny to happen with ashtrays. Anyway, if you're just thinking an intention to PC, you're just as likely to activate one of these crisscrossed, it looks like the janitor relieving the switchboard girl during a noon hour in which an emergency occurred. You know, and every wire is out of its socket, and they're all in, crisscrossed across the boards, and all phones are plugged to all phones, and all of them wrong. So, of course, you call up the president's office or something like this, and you get the electrical maintenance shop, you know. And it's just all cross-wired. And you run into that in running the CCHs. So it actually isn't, quote, all the PC's fault, unquote. A PC is not necessarily being recalcitrant when he doesn't follow your auditing intention or starts to blow up or wogs or does something like this. What you're actually doing is you're giving him the intention and the guidance to carry out that intention, not the intention then called upon by the switchboard. If you want to have some fun sometime with an e-meter, start talking to the entities in a body. There's all kinds of screwball phenomena that we've run into. We probably have more phenomena and nonsense that we have discovered about life and so forth in Scientology than they've accumulated in the whole of the last 50,000 years. Infinitely more. It's really, really goofy. You could sit down and start talking to somebody's circuit and just get the PC to relay what the circuit said. And for some peculiar reason, you hook in the circuit harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. Of course, the oddity is that a circuit hooks in on drop of haddingness, and that you're making a communication line talk across to a circuit. You are, one, validating the circuit, and two, you're running down its haddingness. Because a circuit has no livingness in it. It is simply a motivated mass. And if there's anything running it at all, it is mass. So you get a circuit to communicate very much, and mass goes. If you want to pull somebody's circuits in on him, run his haddingness down. There's a funny experiment that goes with this, by the way. It takes rather special conditions to operate. You have to be pretty sharp to get this thing. There's two or three of these. One of them is a problem. That's the commonest one and the easiest one to do. Is the individual tells you have a present time problem. So you say, think of a solution. He gives you a solution. You say, good. Think of another solution to this problem. Like, good. But think of another solution to this problem. And you wonder why this PC is starting to go wag, man. And he does. He starts to go wag. Because you're doing something to the stable core of an area of motion. And you're leaving all the motion on automatic, you see. And what happens is that I got the mechanism on this a few weeks ago. And it's in my notes somewhere. But what happens is actually the person is not confronting the actuality of that thing at all. He's not confronting what is actually going on. He's confronting a solution to it, which means he's trying to not is what it is. And the problem mass moves in on him, and it's quite interesting to watch.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
So all you have to do to weaken a Thetan is to get in the road of his intentions. Foul up his intentions. Now, if you can foul up a Thetan's intentions, you can weaken him. Now, what do I mean by weaken him? A person picks up on Monday a 500-pound weight, but on Tuesday can only pick up a 300-pound weight. Between Monday and Tuesday, he has been weakened, right? Do you understand? It's this graphic. It's not to the philosophic derivation of his morals become weak, don't you know? Well, on Monday, he can throw a raw energy beam 100 yards. On Tuesday morning, he can only throw one 10 feet. Between Monday and Tuesday, he has become weakened. That's what I mean by weakened. And the way that is done is to give him loses on his intentions. All you've got to do is foul up or counter or blunt his intentions, and he becomes weaker. Weakness and strength in a Thetan, and of course, well, it's weakness is the only thing that holds him entrapped. Weakness is the only thing that keeps masses pulled in on him. Weakness is the only thing that keeps him pinned down. You can only trap a Thetan when he is weak. And you need only really be afraid of things that are very weak. With, of course, the proviso of certain magazine editors. We skip them, leave them out of that category because they've had it.
the main thing that we have to watch in this, then, in auditing, is that we do not weaken the actual intention of the PC by blunting his actual intentions. And in order to do this, we must differentiate between his reactive intention, his dramatization, in other words, and his own intention. So we have the subdivision of the PC and his bank. A person who is dramatizing during an ARC break actually is not intending anything they say. This is simply bank dramatized. You see? It's all bank dramatized. Rah, 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 rah. He isn't intending anything. That falls out then. That's a recording or something going off. You see? That is not his intention. So we don't say that everything somebody must do, we must validate. You start validating the bank 100%, and you've had it as an auditor. But we're talking about now the actual intentions of the person. He intended to have a 2.5-hour session. And you give him a 3.5-hour session. You have blunted his intention. He intended to get off this stuff about Aunt Hattie. And you called the process flat long before it were flat. So therefore, you have blunted his intention. You can't ruin a PC. I'm just talking about how smoothly you can audit. You understand this, because you're not going to spoil anybody's intentions or cave them in by auditing, let me assure you. But you can key in incidents on him and so forth where his intention is very badly blunted by simply taking an auditing cycle of action and not completing it. In other words, he intends so forth, you intend so on, and there you go, and you finish it off, and you wind it up, you've completed the cycle of action. That intention has gone through a complete cycle of action. If you interrupt it halfway, no intention. Goals for the session. Here's a good point. You get a PC to put in goals for the session. That's actually a participating intention. So I always work hard on giving a PC goals for the session. I almost work harder to give the PC his goals for the session than I do to give him a session. See, I can give anybody a session and cure anything or straighten them up. See, that doesn't worry me. But this PC sitting down there has just got through saying, to feel better about my lumbosis. I'll put that in. I won't take up the body of the session until I've got the oddball goal out of the road. But any PC that's trying to break or stop or not go through with a flattening and so forth, putting in a bunch of sideways goals could actually stop you from auditing or completing your cycle of action and roll himself up in a ball. A reactive barrier can arise out of this situation. So he puts in a lot of oddball goals, don't have anything to do about the price of the thing. I'll still clean them up. I'll still clear them up. But take out the little kit, you know? The little kit with a little whisper on. I get those out of the road. Notice the PC apparently has a present time problem. This is in R6 auditing. This is not ordinarily auditing. I mean, this is, therefore, any kind of auditing. If you pay attention to the PC's goals for the session at R6, when you're totally capable of getting 100 TA divisions, you see, in 2.5 hours, well, good heavens, how much would it apply down at the levels when he's getting 15 in a 2.5-hour session and lucky to get it. So it very definitely applies. Person's got goals for the session. I've looked those things over. Pickety pow pow. Got a print time problem here. Let's get the considerations for that present time problem. Well, I suppose you have a print time problem here. What considerations you had about that? All right, that's fine. Okay. And you had a bad neck. Been bothering you and so forth. All right, is that an R6 phenomenon? Is that from goals? And it doesn't seem to be from goals. Something else seems to have gone on here with regard to this. What was the first you noticed this? All right, good. All right. Well, let's date this. Pow, pow, pow. We're doing about a 4 and 5 minute process, don't you see? I mean, we're driving it right straight along the line. We got the PC on. We're just brushing this thing off, so you're getting this out of the road. But we're doing this other thing. We're giving him a goal for the session. So. How? We got that out of the road. We dated it to somatic blue and so forth. You have to be quick on this kind of auditing. He's made that goal for the session right there. I haven't even started the body of the session. The session now is, with since mid-roods and everything else that has happened, is only 35 minutes deep, and we're away into the body of the session on what I want to do. He's already made his goals for the session. You want to see the good indicators come in? Make sure the person gets any PT problem type of goal for the session and so forth. Get him win on the first 5 minutes of play. Then get down to something important. Oh, yeah, you say this takes very skilled, very fast, very tricky auditing. You really have to know what you're doing to be able to get rid of somebody's lumbosis that's been keeping them up all night in the first 10 minutes of the session. No. Who's getting rid of it? We just keyed it out. We just gave it a swift kick so it isn't bothering the PC. Made his goal for the session, too. Therefore, his intention level is up. So therefore, he's more powerful in the session. Therefore, he can look at his bank better. See this? That's why a person makes no progress while he has a PTP. His intentions are being blunted or overlooked, and so he cannot rise superior to his bank, so he makes no progress. What is a PTP? It's postulate counter postulate. You could just as easily interpret this as intention counter intention. You will not find a present time problem where a person's intentions have not been blended. Something is fighting his intention. And it seems to him that it's of equal magnitude. Intention versus intention. He has an intention, somebody else has another intention. These two intentions lock together, and you get a present time problem. It tends to hang up in time. And that's how you get a time hang up, basic time hang up. Intention counter intention. Let's look at class 5 for a moment, not because we're teaching you anything about class 5, but because this is a marvelous field of demonstration. Why do you think in the Helotrobus and the Trillions 2 and other implant areas a pose was in vogue? It isn't even the actual GPM. The actual GPM is a subvolitional intention which is way downstairs. It goes in with an axe. Everything inevitably brings about something else. Doesn't matter what happens, if something else is going to be brought about. Very apathetic, very low. But these brisker levels, more ambitious levels, how did they knock out the power of a Thetan? How could they possibly do anything to a Thetan? Well, the implant means, by using key goals like to go, to stay, to move, to go away, to forget, to remember, this type of goal, all mucked up with innumerable variations of that goal, serve as key intentions. So when he intends to remember, he, of course, will get Nix to remember. He get an automatic and instant blunting of intention. That was the intention of the implant. Very far from flawlessly works. Thetans transcend this stuff rather easily. But there is the woof and warp of implants and how they are done and why. Anybody setting up implants that are going to be successful would simply blunt intentions. Blunt intentions, that's the whole thing. So he says to move, he immediately gets not to move. And then the implant GPMs interact one against the other, so if he gets the idea to stay, then he feels he has to move. And if he gets the idea to move, then he feels he's got to stay. So they counter oppose each other too. So opposition or oppose is the keynote to an implant. And this is the only way they're aberrative. There is no other reason. The amount of mass, and mass, the Thetan only keeps the mass of these things around because he can't get rid of them. He's automatically creating it, and he's doing other things. But an implant GPM has too little mass to be very upsetting to the individual, but it upsets his ideas. So he gets the idea to go, and he gets the counter-intention. Hits him in the face. The way they civilize a child, for instance, all he had to do is break all his intentions. Somebody talking about spoiling a child or upsetting a child, that's a very silly to say that by giving a child everything, you spoil the child, or by being nice to a child, you spoil a child. They're just drawing a long bow. They couldn't be further from the mark. It's blunting every intention the child has. And remember that there are reactive intentions and that there are analytical intentions, two varieties. So we let the reactive intention have its way. Child cries, screams, and throws a tantrum. We instantly give him what he wanted. That validated the reactive intention. The child wants to sit quietly and look out the window. Analytical intention. So we get him busy doing something else. By the time we've crossed these things, in other words, validated the reactive intentions by rewarding the child and obeying the reactions, and blunted every analytical intention the child has, would, of course, have weakened the thetan, become susceptible to illness and that sort of thing, simply because masses move in on him. I mean, a person who is weakened is unable to hold anything at a distance, so everything collapses on him. You understand what I'm talking about? This is terribly simple, and it evades understanding just by being in itself so idiotically simple. So your PC has two types of intentions. And one is totally reactive. It's just a dramatization. We won't call it an intention. We call it a dramatization. Every time your PC dramatizes, you let him have his way. And every time your PC pleasantly, nicely wants to do something analytically, you blunt his intention. After a while, you're going to have your PC practically spinning on the subject of auditing reaction. He won't be able to handle things in session. You find the PC isn't cognizing. You find this and that and so forth. There's many an auditor pays no attention to the PC until the PC starts ARC breaking. Now the auditor knows something is happening. So he decides to do something for the PC because the PC has ARC broken. But actually the PC has been sitting there auditing splendidly, beautifully, and smoothly. His PCing is very nice, and he sort of timidly brings up the fact that he'd really like to look at this engram he's seen there just a moment longer. He brings this up. He says it's bothering him a little bit. He doesn't quite know what it's all about. A little bit of an origin, you see. It isn't going to take any time. You don't give him an additional re-stimulation. You say, yes, all right. Well, what's it all about? Something like that. So and so and so and so and so and so. All right, that's fine. You get that out of the road and you go on, don't you see? But every time he says, well, I don't really have any more answers to that question. Well, you're damn well going to answer the question. Okay? This is getting onto the borderline of intention, don't you think? So he kind of gets upset one way or the other. The auditor doesn't pay any attention to what's going on there. We've got an uncomfortable situation. PC's intention, cycles of action, what he's doing and so forth are all kind of getting mixed up. And the auditor's paying no attention to this because PC's still in a fairly sweet frame of mind, you see. And the PC finally loses. You understand, a PC doesn't turn nasty. A PC gets overwhelmed by his bank. That's always the case. And the PC own intentions, having been blunted badly, then loses control over control, and on an automaticity starts blowing its head off, going into all sorts of dramatization of one kind or other, even though it's just the dramatization of apathy. Bank is in a dramatization. Well, of course, the auditor acts. That's what we know as acting too late. Catching a slipping situation too late gives you these explosive ARC breaks. They generally telegraph themselves way ahead. But what's happened there is really the PC has become overwhelmed by his own bank. You're not watching the PC's intentions now. You're watching the PC's dramatization. But you don't do anything about the PC's intentions, you will eventually get the PC's dramatizations. That's quite an elementary situation. It's one which an auditor should understand. Now, I spoke to you some time ago in a lecture about what is a win and what is a lose, just going over that cursorily. A win is accomplishing what you intend to accomplish, or accomplishing the not accomplishment of something you didn't intend to accomplish. You get the idea. You intended not to have any ARC breaks, and in the session you not had any ARC breaks. You understand? Well, that's a win. See? And a lose is just exactly the reverse. It's exactly the reverse. Things you intended not to happen happened, and things which you intended to happen didn't happen. That's a lose. And that's all a win is, and that's all a lose is. That's all. So when we compare this situation to auditing, we find out then that the auditor's intention is valuable to the session. And because he's less susceptible to dramatization from the bank in the PC, since he's not really at all greatly susceptible to the bank in the PC, it's PC's bank, it's not hitting the auditor. And because the auditor is capable of standing outside that perimeter of potential dramatization, the auditor's intention in a session is therefore senior to the PC's intention. But if the PC's intention is totally neglected with regard to a session, we again get a weakening of the PC and an encroachment of dramatization. So the auditor intends to flatten off such and such a process, and the PC intends to take care of something else he has thought about overnight. Well, that PC has been subject to dramatization because of restimulation. It'd be very foolish not to flatten off the original process, because that was the original intention, wasn't it? That wasn't finished, and yet the PC wants to do another one. Well, this is going to hang him up with an intention loss, whether he likes it or not. And the auditor, standing outside this perimeter, of course, can complete the cycle of action on which he began. And that gives a win to the auditor and the PC. You follow that? PC's analytical intentions, then, are valuable to a session, and they are very often expressed in the goals of the session, and they are cared for accordingly. That's the way it is. Now, he intends to get a certain distance, and actually down deep, he really intends to become OT. He's never investigated this. It's running far too deep. But way down underneath all the layers of God help us, he intends to get to be OT, that's for sure. In other words, he intends to recover. He doesn't even, though, have enough analytical awareness of where he's going to know what he intends. He intends freedom and a return of power. Which is to say, he intends freedom and a return of intention. Well, he now can go all the way. He now can go all the way. That is well within grasp. If he walks along a certain path and doesn't keep jumping off the cliff and so forth, why, he will arrive. Well, therefore, the intention for him to arrive is very sotto voce in him. And an auditor with some experience and action on this, intending him to arrive, the auditor's intention is actually more reliable than the PC's, even though the PC is more deep and fundamental than the auditor. Why? Because every time he starts coming up the line, this PC is going to short-circuit into some direction, fail to complete a cycle of action someplace, leave a rock in the road somewhere or another, and he'll get some wild idea, and well, I've seen it happen, man. This PC is supposed to be prep checked on something or other in order to get something or other accomplished so that he won't always be coming to session with this gross PTP about his domestic affairs or something like this, don't you think? And somebody's decided to get this out of the road so they can proceed. And he's thrown that all sideways, and he spent the night listing goals. Well, in the first place, the reason he listed goals had to do with the fact that his intention about his marital problem was being blunted. So Kay's advance is now reinterpreted into some kind of an escape from his present time problem. So he doesn't know which way he's going. He doesn't know what cycle of action he's on. Is he on the cycle of action of completing his present time problem with his domestic affairs? Or is he on the cycle of action of becoming a free being? Well, he's on the cycle of action of becoming free from his wife. He's not on the cycle of action of becoming a free being. Well, something weird goes on when you've got this kind of thing happening. He's on a small perimeter. He's on a little cycle of action. He's using a huge cycle of action potential to accomplish this little cycle of action, you see? He's using a 20-millimeter machine gun to shoot a grasshopper, see? And of course, he can't shoot this grasshopper because actually you can't get the muzzle to be pressed enough. You get this kind of... Yet, he's got freedom mixed up with escape. He wants to fix it so he doesn't have to confront things anymore. All this kind of thing goes on. And all that can get in an auditor's road hugely. I'm talking to you now about fine points. You know, in spite of all this, you can blunder through. You know, I'm just giving you some fine points here. You could get there somehow, prep checking the rough edge off of a person's lumbosis and somehow or another this, and somebody puts him together with sticky plaster because too many unflat processes exist on the case, and then somehow or another you finally find a GPM, and you get enough tone arm action out of the GPM to, you get the idea, to sort of cancel out some of the other sins and ills that are occurring. You'd get there somehow. You could muddle through. But these are the fine points. These are the fine points of the business. He's as weak as his intentions are blunted. He will become as strong as his intentions are free. The greatest holder backer of intentions is the person himself, because he puts himself in danger every time he has a dangerous intention. I think your international champions in boxing, let us say, or something like that, probably have an awful time. They probably educate themselves right out of a hard punch merely because they're walking through the society all the time. It'd be very, very dangerous indeed for them to uncork a hard punch in the bite-a-wee cocktail bar. That's supposed to be reserved only for the stage. So here's an intention that is becoming narrowed and specialized. They eventually come quite weak. I'm not talking about something that you could measure by the diameter of the biceps, the number of foot-pounds of punch deliverable. You see, they're having to withhold this intention. This intention's got to be very much pulled down. They've got to condition this intention. If they have a trainer and a manager that tells him, not only hit with your right hand during moments of something or other, some fellow across as their opponent in the ring could stand there with his guard dropped, the person's left hand in perfectly good condition to deliver the final blow that would end the whole match, you see, and yet would never strike the blow. His intention now is far, far too specialized and channeled. And you ask, fellow, what restraints do you have to put on yourself in your everyday living? You're going to get almost a roaring automaticity. He has been taught that his intentions are dangerous to him. He's been taught that he can get a dangerous intention. He's been taught as well that his intentions can get out of his control and he can accidentally intend something. So once in a while you have somebody walking around in circles. There's been a fire in Birmingham or something of the sort. And there'll be somebody walking around in circles worrying because he might have let an intention out from underneath his hat and started the fire in Birmingham. And he liked to be worried about this. Whereas the guy couldn't even warm up a cup of coffee if he had a stove, see? But Thetans become very worried about this sort of thing. And they become very protestive. And one of the big games is to make somebody protest his intentions. What are your intentions toward me, sir? You see, it's the standard girl's question. clarify your intentions and so forth. Wasn't it Voltaire that won every argument before he even began it? He said somebody had to define his terms before he could argue with him. Well, that's very interesting, but if you carried that a little further, you'd find the guy would get so busy defining his terms that his intention to have anything else happening would be nil. You wouldn't find much of debate and progress here, don't you see? You must define your intentions or what you're doing. Society does this to us in Scientology. Fortunately, they don't know what our intentions are. And frankly, we've never really sat down and mapped it all out as to what our intention should be, which is probably the way it should be, don't you see? Because therefore, there's nothing to blunt. Nobody has ever expressed the matter. That's sort of a lazy way to go about it. But they have all sorts of assignments to us in Scientology as to what our intentions are. They wouldn't believe our real intentions, so we'll probably make them. But we lose, for instance, a world without insanity or war or something like that. It's a perfectly valid intention. Well, they consider this too high-flown. What are their intentions? So they assign a whole bunch of false intentions to the Scientologists. Well, let them. That's what makes their attacks look so silly, because, of course, they're fighting a set of intentions which don't exist. So it makes them look like they're walking around talking to shadows or something like that. It leaves us completely free and rather unwound into the battle. Actually, any broad intention we have is quite clear-cut. Appears in many books, but it's way over their heads, you see. They can't figure they could blunt that intention, because that's... Well, you take a world without insanity, you take this as an intention. Well, that's good roads and good weather, of course, very unreal, unaccomplishable. Anybody'd look this over there, therefore, it couldn't have anything to do with that. One of these days, we're going to be all surprised. We'll have that intention moving. I even spent a little time in on how would you handle vast numbers of insane, and so forth. Out of that original speculation, we got Scientology Zero processes, by the way. I mean, they're just an offshoot of that. I hate to have to confess that to you, but that was the body of research that came out of, which is just destimulate the environment, give a stable datum for the environment. So, intention. Intention here is everything in case recovery. If a person is regaining his power or ability or something like that, he's merely removing out of his road what blunts his intentions and what has blunted his intentions. And that's all he's doing. So if we look this over with a very critical eye, we find out that the auditor, going through almost any sincere job of auditing, even if clumsily done, will inevitably unblunt some of this PC's intentions. They will be unblunted one way or the other. And we're talking about the upper esoterics of auditing, how to keep auditing from blunting the PC's intentions, you see. Well, an intention is a cycle of action. Anytime you say do, you add time. So a doingness intention or accomplishingness intention has time added to it. The moment that you add time or doingness to the thing, you've got a cycle of action. So an intention is at its highest echelon, totally independent of time and the cycle of action. Intention is simply pure intention and is not necessarily tied into time at all. You could just as easily make a postulate in 1492 or in 2658 as you could in 1964. There isn't any intimate and immediate relationship. But as the individual has gone downscale, he has, of course, more and more associated his intentions with a cycle of action. You make the intention, and then a certain thing occurs, or the intention goes across a space, as in communication, you see, and then it arrives at the other end, and a certain result, therefore, takes place at the other end. So we have a cycle of action. We have the intention now worked into time and space. So the intention originally is totally free of time and space. and has nothing to do with it, and in actual fact, time and space have as their only reality the fact that they are made out of an intention. Doesn't matter whether this intention is an agreed upon intention or otherwise, there's a basic intention which gives us time and space. So it is actually superior to all messed. And you have your fingers on something, it doesn't have to be messed, but as it comes down scale, this becomes expressed to the PC, particularly at the lower levels of a case. Lower levels of cases, this fellow's having a dreadful time, exclamation point. He's just staggering through life, man. He's hitting both walls and walking backwards and falling on his knees every time he turns around. Well, that individual's agreement with a cycle of action means that an intention, there are no intentions anymore. There, however, might be a cycle of action. The intention has disappeared out of the cycle of action, and you simply have this cycle of action. When he goes down any further, he goes down into pure chaos. So therefore, you can take a person who is having a terrible time and tell him to touch the wall, and you've shown him an intention and shown him a cycle of action. You can short session him. You can start a session, run a session, and end a session. 10 minutes worth, see? Then start another session, run a session, end a session. All you're doing is showing him cycle of action, cycle of action, cycle of action. The auditing command, cycle of action. The auditor's command, the acknowledgement, the answer, the acknowledgement, it's a cycle of action. All you're showing him is you're demonstrating the existence of a cycle of action, cycle of action, cycle of action. Any one of these things as they come through. And eventually, his own the reason he cognizes is his own intentions start to free up out of the obsessive messiness of it all. And he starts seeing things, and he starts coming back to batter. He starts adding up what's going on. Well, now, the only way the auditor can get in his road in all this, of course, is to foul up his own cycle of action. The auditor's cycle of action. Now, we could foul this up. One of the ways of fouling it up is to leave processes unflat. Or misinterpret what we're doing with the process. We're trying to get rid of this fellow's lumbosis, a lifetime problem here, so we treat it like it's a rudiment. We give it a little dust off and so forth. We'll misapplication of tools. Well, you're not going to get the attention clear because that back is not going to get better under that kind of treatment. So the auditor's intention is blunted. The PC's intention to have better back is blunted. Everybody loses under that situation. So our intention on the thing laid out, if we're going to have wins, then we must validate analytical intention. Knock out dramatization and be very consistent with completing cycles of action, even though it's an auditing command or getting rid of his lumbosis. And those are the factors with which you are dealing. The auditor must flatten the process within the reality of what he is processing. In other words, within the reality of what's he got here. He's got a little problem that's been generated since last night. So he stops auditing the back, which has been gone, and starts using heavy artillery on this little problem that came up last night. Well, he didn't complete the big cycle of action. He's trying to make too much out of this other cycle of action. He's misapplying his tools, in other words. He's working on this bad back, and the only reason he gets last night's problem out of the way with his little dust kit is just so he can go on and complete this bigger cycle of action. You got to keep the PC on the main chance. You got to flatten the big stuff that you start. You're doing a problems intensive. I don't think you could prep check it in under 10 or 12 hours. If you did a proper assessment on the thing, you'd 10 or 12 hours, I think that'd be a short haul to cover everything, let us say, from 1949 July on up to present time. Well, how do you make it run that long? Well, it isn't how long you make it run. How much is there? Well, that depends on how much you impinge on the PC. That depends on how much you make the PC work at it. It depends on how hard you sweat over this particular action and how clean you keep the PC from ARC breaks. and how clean you keep his interim session difficulties, the between session difficulties, from interrupting you from doing a cycle of action. And for that kind of thing, we've got little brush off things. Do we destimulate this stuff? The rudiment approach, then, the main session approach. And therefore, we can achieve the intentions of the PC, we can achieve the intentions of the auditor. We flatten a process within the reality of what is there to be flattened. And how much is there to be flattened? How much are we tackling here? Well, the fellow has always had a little problem that had to do with, he's always had this problem and so forth. He thinks he's inferior. Well, that's great. That's great. Now, you're going to handle this with a rudiments process. I don't think so. The individual comes into session and he stubbed his toe outside the door and it hurts. You're going to give this a 14-hour prep check. So the magnitude of what you're trying to handle, the duration of time of what you're trying to handle, to a large degree establishes how much time it is going to take you and how much heavy action you will have to take on it, how thoroughly you'll have to flatten it. And those are the establishing factors. But when all else is worked out, you're trying to complete a cycle of action. And on the very bad off case, that is all you can do. That is the most basic process there is simply get a cycle of action completed. And I imagine that an auditing question like this, what did you have to eat for breakfast? Guy's having an awful time, practically blind staggers type PC thing. And 2.5 hours later, with a great deal of two-way calm and discussion and so forth, he has answered the auditing question. It sounds incredible, doesn't it? And yet, you know, the PC'd have a win. PC'd have a big win. You went in too high. It should have been, did you come to the session? That wouldn't have taken so long to do. But if you can get an auditing cycle completed, you get a win. And if you don't get an auditing cycle completed, whatever else you look at or what you think you're looking at, you're going to get a lose. Elementary as that. So when the whole thing is squared away, what you're trying to do as an auditor depends on what you're trying to handle in the PC. The order of magnitude in terms of time and trouble and duration and so forth, and that determines on what kind of flattening you use, and the flattening of the main chance, the big long-term one and so forth, is done very arduously indeed. It's all done by TA. It's never done by anything else but TA. And of course your little stuff that you're trying to get out of the road so you can keep on with your main action is just a rudiments type kickoff, and you just flatten it to cognition or till it isn't bothering the PC and it's out of the road and you're away. You see why this is now? You see how this is? All right. I hope you can have some wins on this. Thank you.